Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello once again, folks. It's John Ray with North Fulton Business Radio, and we are normally in our beautiful studio, actually, in Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta, but we're not there right now because of pandemic-related restrictions. But in the meantime, we're still big fans of Renaissance, folks, and if you are looking for a more personal way to do your banking, if you're looking to avoid 1-800 numbers, give Renaissance Bank a call or go to renaissancebank.com and find the nearest office and go by and see them. You do have to call ahead of time to make an appointment because they're accepting appointments for walk-ins in the branches. But they're terrific. We know this personally from some of the work we've done with clients, and they'd be happy to talk to you about what your needs are and see if they can help you. So 200 offices across the South ready to serve you. It's Renaissance Bank at renaissancebank.com. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Almeda Cooper. And Almeda is a principal with her own firm, the A.E. Cooper Group. Almeda, welcome.
Welcome. Good to be here with you, John.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. So give folks a little bit of flavor on you and your firm. How do you help the market out there?
Well, based on my more than three decades of deep and broad experience in healthcare as an executive, as a lawyer, and a board member, I formed the A.E. Cooper Group to allow me to use my people skills and my substantive knowledge to help mainly healthcare attorneys, healthcare consultants, and small businesses and corporations through coaching, counseling, and advising. Now, most recently, I've been focusing on the broad areas of coaching legal talent, board effectiveness, and on virtual public speaking on public interest topics like the one we're going to discuss today.
Mm. And you've got a fascinating background that covers a variety of different areas. And one of them, if you don't mind me delving into this right here at the top, is you were general counsel at Morehouse in the medical school, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. Yes. That must have been fascinating work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the most exciting things about healthcare is that it's always changing. There's always something going on. And what's really wonderful is that at the end of the day, you're helping patients. You're doing good. Mm-hmm. And there's just such a wide range of areas where medical schools and healthcare practices are able to help different populations. Morehouse School of Medicine here in Atlanta really focuses on leading health equity. And they have a great staff of physicians with all types of disciplines who are really doing a fabulous job in serving the patients that are in their target population.
That's great work. And we may have to have you back to talk more about that. But our topic of the day is in search of a tech-savvy lawyer, tech-savvy attorney, and why that's important for business owners who hire attorneys for their own business. So why is it important that a small business owner or a business in general have an attorney that is tech savvy?
Well, John, in order to understand the importance of being tech savvy, you really have to understand what a lawyer's basic core duties are. And the number one duty that a lawyer has is to be competent, to know the subject matter that the small business wants help with, to stay current with the law, to, in plain words, to simply be able to do a good job for their client. And just like you would expect a physician to know medicine, or you'd expect your mechanic to know how to fix a car, you expect your lawyer to be competent. And in today's world, what's generally recognized is that you also have to be tech competent. The other core duty that a lawyer has is to be ethical and to represent their client's interests with undivided loyalty, to keep their secrets, and to represent that small business owner in a way that's within the bounds of the law. And I just mentioned to you that in the 21st century, because of the pervasiveness of technology, that it's understood that a lawyer has to also be able to be aware of the risk and the benefits of technology. One of the things I want to point out, and you mentioned it when you introduced us to today, is that we are in the middle of a pandemic. And what the statistics show is that 87% of all lawyers are working remotely. Mm. So that issue of technology has become, you know, even more important. Another thing that I think that just really would be helpful to your listeners is kind of to know the context of why tech competence is actually a standard that we as lawyers have to follow. And it was established in 2012 by the American Bar Association. And there are about 38 jurisdictions across the country who have adopted specifically that rule or that standard that requires tech competence. So it's not just the aspirational goal. It's also, in order to keep your license in many jurisdictions, you have to be able to demonstrate that you're tech competent. Now, unfortunately, I have to share with your listeners that they've done some surveys through the Future Ready Lawyer Survey, and there's only about 28% of all lawyers that in today we could say are tech competent. Although about 3/4 of all lawyers recognize that it's really important. So we're trying to, I'm hoping that with our conversation today, we can raise public awareness about the importance of tech competence.
Well, something's not right here, because if 38 states are requiring some form of tech competence, yet only 28% of all attorneys have tech competence, then there's a whole bunch of them getting through, not to the net somehow, not to mention the fact that there are 12 states that, and you said Georgia is one of them when we were talking about this before coming on the air, that don't even require tech competence at all.
Well, yes, and that's why I'm talking with you today, because I'm sort of taking this on a little bit of a personal mission to try to raise awareness. Mm. I also, not only I'm talking with your listeners today who are mainly business owners, but I also talk with lawyers as well to try to help them understand the importance of being tech savvy or tech competent, and to understand that, and this is, you know, you hate to use a stick with people, but because it is a reasonable expectation of competence, if a lawyer fails to demonstrate tech competence, they could be sued for legal malpractice. So I don't like to emphasize that negative part of it, but you know, that's sometimes you have to share with people, give them a little incentive.
Wow. Yeah. You got my attention on that, Almeda. as folks, we're speaking with Almeda Cooper, and she is principal of her own practice, the AE Cooper Group. So I want to, as we kind of delve into what the problem is, and then we'll talk about the solutions here as we go along, but I want to make sure we define what in your mind is tech competence, because that's what I, as a business owner, I need to understand that. So I need to know what questions to ask my prospective attorney. So what in your mind is tech competence?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that unfortunately, there is no simple definition. What if you were to look at some of the standards that are in those 38 states that I mentioned, what you would see is that it's a very general standard based on reasonable expectations. And what you would see is language around something like a lawyer is expected to know the benefits and risks associated with the use of technology. So you're not going to see a specific standard that says, oh, you know, that lawyer has to know Microsoft Word, you know, the Office Suite, Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, or that they have to know how many gigs are required, you know, on the of data for their computer. It's going to be that more general standard. But what I would say is that in order for a business owner to kind of get their hands around whether or not someone is tech competent, that you really have to incorporate that question in how you choose a lawyer. So tech competence is just one part of the decision process. You have to, if you're looking for a lawyer, you have a lawyer, you really going to use that same kind of little checklist that you would use in selecting a lawyer. So first of all, you want to know who you're dealing with. You know, start with the basics. Is that person licensed in the state of Georgia or wherever they're practicing? And you want to do your research like you do with any other business partner. You find out people who know that lawyer, know that they're competent generally in the area that you need them to help you. And then you want to make sure that you have an understanding of what their expectations are as a lawyer and what your expectations are. And then, of course, the all important thing that most business people want to know is they want to know about the fees and how they can pay. So really, in order to find out if a lawyer is tech competent, you've got to ask questions. And one of the simple things that you can do is ask that lawyer how he or she is going to communicate with you and how frequently. So just as an aside, communication is unfortunately the number one disciplinary problem for lawyers. But in 2020, your lawyer should be saying to you, well, we're going to communicate by email. We're going to, and I don't want you to text me because I can't really guarantee you a secure line to text me. There's also what I would call some red flags, and, you know, in my father would call it common sense, but let's just for this purpose call them red flags. If your lawyer says to you, I want you to mail your check in to the office for payment, that ought to kind of might cause an eyebrow to raise because in this pandemic, think about it. Who's going into the office? 87% of the people are working remotely. And even though that's not a substantive talent, it just kind of gives you an indication, like, what's going on here? Why is that lawyer doing that? Or you might ask the lawyer, how will I share my confidential documents with you because I'm not able to come into the office and bring them to you? So if your lawyer doesn't know how to do simple things like password protect a document or doesn't have a secure portal, then that might raise a question for you. I mean, think about it. If you deal with, as you're a business owner, you deal with your accountant has a secure portal. If you go to your doctor's office, all they do is talk to you about confidentiality of information, and you know that they're not going to communicate with you unless it's through secure email. If you can't pay by check or an electronic check or use a credit card, again, these are all kind of just little indicators that maybe your lawyer is not as tech competent as he or she should be. So I've got to just emphasize, you have to be direct. You have to ask, how are you communicating with your clients during this pandemic? How have you been affected? Are you working remotely? There's kind of a basic checklist of things that you could also ask them. You might want to, in order to establish their basic competency, you want to know how they deal with legal documents. especially because they're working remotely and they don't have their cadre of legal assistants and paralegals, you know, sitting close to them. You want to know that they know how to manage documents and emails, that they know how to collaborate with others through emailing and through sharing documents, that they have security awareness. And I mentioned earlier that they know the basics, like how to use some type of office suite of services like Microsoft, Excel, PowerPoint, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And there's another whole area that's really kind of beyond the scope of our discussion today, but this would be for those business owners who might have litigation going on. There's a whole area of tech competency that deals with court documents, filing court documents, e-discovery. But one important tip for your listeners would be that if you have pending litigation, make sure your lawyer knows how to file remotely and correspond or be in contact with the court or the judge and the opposing counsel. Because it's surprising, it might be surprising, that there are a lot of senior litigators who prior to the pandemic would have relied upon their paralegals or assistants to take care of these kind of tasks. And they may be forced to, in this environment, to do those things themselves. So for, again, that's a topic for another day, but the whole area of litigation and e-discovery is a very important one for people who are actively involved in litigation.
Yeah, I think you answered with that the next question I was going to ask you, which, you know, for a lot of business owners that are not tech companies, I think they may hear tech savvy and think we're talking about, you know, the technology of my business or something like that. That's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about the technology, navigating the technology backbone. That's really kind of the common language of business, if you will, or the common way we communicate through business.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think people should get in their minds when you think of a tech savvy lawyer that person has got to be at the top or the pyramid of knowing all things tech. But really, we're talking about the lawyer's ability to be competent. I keep going back to that part of the equation, to be competent to communicate with you as a client and to protect your information.
Yeah, if they think Zoom is a sound a plane makes, that's probably a bad sign, right?
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned Zoom because that is a technology that, as a lawyer, you know, while you know the conversation that we're having right now, we want the most people to hear it possible. So mm-hmm. you're not concerned about protecting it from a Zoom bomber or somebody who's interfering with your ability to have that confidential communication. And there are settings on video conference that you can put in place to ensure that that doesn't happen. But when Zoom first started to be used during the pandemic, there were quite a few problems with that. So you would expect, a reasonable expectation would be that in August of 2020, that by now, your lawyer would know how to ensure that they put the proper settings on video conferencing so that you're having a confidential conversation.
Right, right, exactly. Now, you talked about some basic questions, inquiries that you should make of an attorney when you're hiring an attorney. What about when you've already got an attorney and you want to either make sure that they're tech savvy, tech competent, or you sense that they may not be? What should you do in that circumstance as a business owner?
So, unfortunately, there's no one way to know if a lawyer has met the tech competence standard. There's no exam. There's no certification. It's not on the lawyer's license. It's not something that the lawyer necessarily learns in law school. So there's not going to be a little asterisk on their law degree that says, oh, this person is tech competent. That really what you have to do is remember the questions that I've already mentioned and listen for a red flag. And you got to just ask until you're comfortable. That may not be very assuring to business owners, but there's just no substitution for asking questions. And the other thing that you may want to ask, I mean, generally, you know, the conversation doesn't get this deep, but the lawyers have the ability to become competent. There are lots of state bar associations that have continuing legal education and classes for lawyers to become more tech savvy. My good friend and colleague at the State Bar of Georgia, Natalie Robinson Kelly, is the director of law practice management, and they offer a whole list of classes. And they also have an assessment that they can do for lawyers as part of their consultations that they do on law practice management to help lawyers know whether they are reasonably tech competent. So you might want to ask your lawyer, you know, those kinds of questions like, oh, what, you know, what do you do to become, to be able to serve me as a client? Because I'm, you know, I'm pretty tech savvy. You know, as a business lawyer, you may say, oh, I'm pretty tech savvy. And, you know, what are you using? You can also, just one other thing I wanted to say.
And, sure.
Lawyers also have access to the American Bar Association has a huge legal technology resource center. So that's another place where lawyers can go to get help.
And you mentioned one other thing in there that I thought was really important about texting, for example. I mean, we consider texting to be a little bit more tech savvy, but there's some real security reasons on why an attorney might not choose to do that. So, not all tech savvy, if you will, is created equal, right?
Right, right. And some of the things that we, like, to your point, like some of the activities that we engage in as individuals and we kind of take for granted, oh, I'm going to text someone, but really any highly confidential information should not be text, you know, done by text. And that's whether it's to your lawyer or your physician, if you have, you know, any kind of confidential information. And the other thing, again, not that we all often have an eye towards litigation, but if you think about some of the, news articles that have appeared, you know, over the last several years, a lot of times people, because texting is so casual, a lot of times they have information in text that's just not appropriate, and it is subject to discovery. Just because it's a text does not mean that others could not, you know, eventually get their eyes on those texts and their content.
Folks, we're here with Almeda Cooper, and she's walking us through the reasons why we need to think about our attorneys being tech competent. So what happens if my attorney makes a mistake that is caused by a lack of tech competence? What happens then? What should I do?
So if you were to have a lawyer who makes a mistake or some you're injured as a client, if you were working with a law firm, one option would be to contact the head of the law firm to make them aware of this issue and see how they can help rectify the problem. But you might not be comfortable because you've already had something happen that's adversely affecting you to going back to that lawyer or that law firm and saying, you know, making a complaint. So fortunately, what you can do in most states and certainly in the state of Georgia, you can contact the State Bar has a client assistance program. And let me just give that telephone number for your listeners in case they would ever need it. It's 404-527-8759. 404-527-8759. And if you didn't want to call, what you can do is put in your browser, just put client assistance program, State Bar of Georgia. That's a lot easier. I did have the actual address or link, but it's rather lengthy, and I think it would be a little hard to do over right. the radio. But if you simply put in client assistance program, State Bar of Georgia, you can get that, you can get the State Bar of Georgia, and they have a program set up. And if the problem is a more serious one, meaning most of the time it's a fairly simple problem that the client assistance program assists with, but they do have a mechanism for sort of sending it up the ladder, if you will, if it's a more serious problem, to the disciplinary or grievance council at the State Bar Association. And again, you can simply put in State Bar of Georgia, and you'll be able to go right to the website and be able to get assistance there.
And when you do that, when you make a complaint like that, I mean, that kind of, I would think that spoils the relationship fairly quickly when you do that with your attorney, unless it's an extraordinary person. That attorney is an extraordinary person that I'm generally not familiar with. But I mean, that really is when you know the relationship is not salvageable, right?
Right. Yeah. That obviously, if you get to that point, you have tried to get the problem resolved with the lawyer, which is, you know, always the best to first go to the person who caused the problem. But if that doesn't work, then at least you have some recourse. And, you know, again, the extreme recourse would be if you were forced to file a legal malpractice suit against your lawyer. But by that time, the relationship is pretty much broken.
Almeida, you've got a extraordinary background, a lot of different, I can't even, we don't, our show's not long enough to get into all of your background, but I'm curious about at this stage in your life, your journey, your career, I mean, why are you so passionate about this subject?
Well, you know, as a lawyer, and I know a lot of times people don't think about lawyers this way, because, you know, if you think about that annual Gallup poll that they always come up with and say, you know, what are the most respected professions? It's nurses, engineers, medical doctors, pharmacists, dentists. And unfortunately, we lawyers are down there at number 14 on that pretty much every year.
Right.
But lawyers, being a lawyer is being a part of a profession, and being part of a profession, you're a public servant. And I guess I was heavily influenced because I had two parents who were social workers. I'm always kind of interested in how I can help others. That's kind of my personal mission. I just really enjoy being able to help people resolve problems. I think that's probably my biggest skill, is that I have, throughout my career, I've been able to be an effective problem solver.
And you do, you not only counsel businesses about the importance of tech savvy attorneys, hiring them, but you also work with attorneys themselves. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that part of what you do.
Yeah. So as lawyers, I've worked with lawyers in different disciplines, but in particular, this is a tough time. This economy is a tough time right now for new lawyers who had plans to either join a law firm or go to a particular in-house position. And that may be on hold now. And what I try to do is, you know, to talk with those lawyers and to help them think about their career path, to think about how they can use their talents and skills to find their next opportunity. Or sometimes it's really just trying to develop their career and to look at their career path and to think very critically about what their skills are, what their strong suit is, because being a lawyer is more than just your hard skills or your substantive knowledge, but it's also, you know, how you use your people skills in order to serve clients. So that those are some. And then, for example, I'll give you a specific example. One of the people that I worked with had been a partner in a law firm for many years and then became a general counsel in-house. And because I had, you know, more than 30 years of being an in-house general counsel, I was able to help her make that transition because it's very different from being an outside lawyer to being inside with basically 24/7 access by your clients and really being engaged in everything that your client does in-house and the access that your clients have to you. Whereas when you're an outside lawyer or you're in a law firm, you can kind of control that relationship and you're more project-based and you kind of finish that project and move on. Whereas when you're an in-house counsel, you are an integral part of that organization and people come to look upon you for many types of advice, not just pure legal advice, but sometimes also business advice that is a part of whatever the organization is. So that's how I have been able to help lawyers at different stages of their career. Or the other thing that I always tell lawyers, especially young lawyers, I've worked with a lot of them, is that being a lawyer is a lot more than just, you know, writing a memo, solving, you know, finding out the answer to a legal problem. It's also making sure that you have a broad knowledge of what the business does if you're representing a business, what the business is doing, and how your advice is going to impact them today and tomorrow and in the future. So there are a lot of very smart people, but not every smart person is a good lawyer. And that what you want to be or what I want to be is a good lawyer that really helps your client.
Wow. Great words here from Almeda Cooper. She's a principal with her own firm, the AE Cooper Group. Almeda, this has been great. And you've brought up a subject here pointing to something that I think business owners really need to pay attention to. So thank you for that. And I am certain that some folks that hear this may want to be in touch with you. So if you could give whatever contact information you have, that would be awesome.
Yes. Well, the best way to get in touch with me is at aecooper381@gmail.com. aecooper381@gmail.com. And I will respond to you when you contact me.
That's great. And just a quick note that Almeda is on LinkedIn too. So I'm sure you welcome folks that would connect with you on LinkedIn as well. So
as well, yeah.
Okay, awesome. Almeda Cooper has been with us, folks, with the AE Cooper Group. Almeda, thanks so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, John.
Yeah, thank you. Folks, if you have some other headaches that maybe don't involve your attorney, but maybe they involve administrative tasks in your business that are really weighing you down, maybe you've got a bookkeeping problem that needs to be fixed. Well, I've got an answer for you that involves picking up the phone and calling Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels. Now, her firm has been virtual for 18 years, so they know this current environment. They know that how to operate in a pandemic because they've been virtual all this time. So what Essie does is hear what your problem is, and she picks the best angel in her heavenly team, and they fly in, get the job done, and fly back out. And they do that on an ongoing or as-needed basis. So give Essie a call at 770-442-9246 or go to officeangels.us for more information. And just another quick note, folks, North Fulton Business Radio is the search term if you want to find us on your favorite podcast app. Note that I did not mention any specific app because we're on all of them. So you can find us on any podcast app you use. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term. We'd love it if you would subscribe download our shows and give us a great review. If you would, if you find a show that particularly stands out for you, because that helps others find the show and they can benefit from the services of folks like Almedia and the other guests that we've had over the years. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. North Fulton BRX is our handle on those three platforms. So for my guest, Almedia Cooper, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.